Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to do a short chapter, chapter 20, verses 1 through 9 of the book of Joshua. Our context is this. Joshua has just finished allotting the remaining seven tribes of Israel who had not had their inheritance given to them yet. Joshua did that basically in chapters 17, 18, and 19. So now we're in chapter 20. He's going to finish up with all this. Well, not quite. He's going to do the cities of refuge in these nine verses in chapter 20. And chapter 21, he's going to finish up with all the cities and pasture land allotted to Levi because they didn't have a tribal division. So let's start now in Joshua 20, verses 1 through 3. Then the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, designate the cities of refuge of which I spoke to you through Moses, that the manslayer who kills any person unintentionally, without premeditation, may flee there. And they shall become your refuge from the avenger of blood." Now, when did God speak to Joshua? Probably at the door of the tabernacle, which is usually where God spoke to Moses. John Gill says this, quote, "Out of the tabernacle, at the door of which he was, of which he with the high priest and princes were, the Lord had spoken to him before concerning dividing the land among the tribes." Joshua 13, 1 through 7, and this being done, he speaks to him again. So generally when God speaks to somebody, it's at the door of the tabernacle in the presence of the Lord because God lived in the tabernacle in the Holy of Holies. Now, Joshua mentions that the cities of refuge had already been spoken about to Moses. That happened back in Numbers 35, verses 9 through 34. And this incident where God spoke to Moses was spoken in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho right before Moses was to die and Joshua was to take over to carry the Israelites across the Jordan River into the Promised Land. He also mentioned the cities of refuge again in Deuteronomy 19, 1 through 13. When I say he, I mean God and Moses, God speaking through Moses, and the instructions concerning the cities of refuge in Deuteronomy 19. Those instructions were again spoken in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from the Jericho. It's amazing how important these cities of refuge were. It's amazing how important legal institutions were in the Old Testament. Now, these cities of refuge were so that a manslayer, that's somebody who killed somebody unintentionally without premeditation, either by accident, maybe perhaps by negligence, they may go there, and they shall become your refuge from the avenger of blood. Remember, the custom was back then, they didn't have police and Interpol and all that. They had kinsmen of the deceased who then went out and took it upon themselves to execute the person who killed their kinsmen. Now, this could be kind of bad. You're talking about blood feuds. It seems like all civilizations, China, I know that this was true of this, and also I think in the early Middle Ages, in the barbarian times, when the barbarian tribes were on the verge of forming Europe, they all had avengers of blood, and gradually the state instituted legal institutions so that cases could be heard, passions could be cooled, we got to be sure we don't kill the wrong people for the wrong reason. And so this was an institution which was to stop these blood feuds. This institution of the cities of refuge was done in order that there could be a legal hearing of the case to see whether the manslayer actually was a manslayer or maybe whether he really did premeditate the killing. Now that there was to be a trial in this city of refuge, we read in Numbers 35:12, "The city shall be to you as a refuge from the avenger, so that the manslayer will not die until he stands before the congregation for trial." As we'll see here later, we'll see how that worked, but he didn't automatically become a refugee from justice. He had to prove that he was a manslayer. He had to prove it. Here's what Adam Clark says about this. Quote, "The person might have protection till the cause had been fully heard by the magistrates, who certainly had authority to deliver him up to the avenger if they found on examination that he was not entitled to this protection." So if he actually had committed premeditated murder, they say, okay, out the city you go, out the city gates. Here's the kinsman avenger. You deal with him. And of course, the kinsman avenger would kill him, execute him. So that's how they took care of capital crimes back then in ancient Israel. We go down to Joshua 20, verses 4 through 5. "He," that's the manslayer, "shall flee to one of these cities And remember, a manslayer is not a murderer. He's a manslayer. He unintentionally kills somebody. He shall flee to one of these cities and shall stand at the entrance of the gate of the city and state his case in the hearing of the elders of that city. And they shall take him into the city to them and give him a place so that he may dwell among them. Now, if the avenger of blood pursues him, then they shall not deliver the manslayer into his hand because he struck his neighbor without premeditation and did not hate him beforehand. So they had the hearing. If he really was a manslayer, he's safe. Avenger of blood, go away. Now, notice before the manslayer could even get into the city, he had to stand at the entrance of the gate and state his case. That way, the city would know that they had a case of alleged manslaughter on their hands. They would be alerted. They had to have an instant trial, an instant hearing, I would presume. They had to do it quickly. The manslayer had to announce the fact, I am a manslayer. I am being pursued by an avenger of blood. Let's have a hearing. If the man was not required to do that, the premeditated killer might sneak into the city. And then if he was called, he would say, well, I'm not really a premeditated killer. I'm a manslayer. And by that time, of course, the avenger of blood, who would have a legitimate case against the premeditated murder, he would have to give up because he can't find the murderer in the city. And so then the premeditated murderer would have gotten away with murder. So can't do that. You've got to announce your case as soon as you get to the city. You can't just sneak in the city and say later, hey, even a true manslayer can't get into the city and say a week later, hey, by the way, I'm a manslayer. I need some help here. I need to have a hearing. No, you got to do it immediately. So there won't be any hanky-panky. So there will be premeditated murderers sneaking into the city to take advantage of the city of refuge. Of course, the gate of the city is where judicial business was carried out, political business. That was always done at the gate. Once the elders of the city determined that this was a true manslayer, they would take him into the city. Why? So that's to protect him against the avenger and perhaps to further question him to make sure he really was a manslayer. We go now to verses 6 through 9 of Joshua 20, and we'll finish up this short chapter. He, that's the manslayer, shall dwell in that city until he stands before the congregation for judgment, until the death of the one who is high priest in those days. Now you notice this standing before the gate, that was a preliminary hearing. Now he's got to stand before the congregation for judgment. He's got to, again, prove that he's a manslayer. Lots of judicial procedure here. So he dwells in the city until the death of the one who is the high priest in those days. Then the manslayer shall return to his own city and to his own house, to the city from which he fled. So they set apart Kedesh in Galilee in the hill country of Naphtali, and Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim, and Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the hill country of Judah. Now all those names should be familiar to you if you've been following the geography as we've gone through these podcasts, but I'm going to go through the six cities again once I get to the end. I'll go through a map and show you where they all are. Verse 8, Joshua 20, beyond the Jordan, east of Jericho, they designated Bezer in the wilderness on the plain from the tribe of Reuben, and Ramoth in Gilead from the tribe of Gad, and Golan in Bashan from the tribe of Manasseh. These were the appointed cities for all the sons of Israel and for the stranger who sojourns among them. Notice it's not just Israelites, but also proselytes, aliens, strangers. That whoever kills any person unintentionally may flee there and not die by the hand of the avenger of blood until he stands before the congregation. So the avenger of blood gets to stay in the city of refuge either until he dies or until the high priest dies, whichever comes first. And of course, his protection as a refugee would end as soon as he left the city walls. So if he decided, well, I'm going to go back home, well, the avenger of blood could get him and it's too bad. Notice that this disability, this restriction on the freedom of movement of a manslayer, is punishment for manslaying. Because if it's a negligent homicide, I mean, our court system today punishes people for negligent homicide, for manslaughter. Our courts will not punish somebody for an accident, of course. But this legal situation was not an encouragement to negligence. People would say, well, I didn't tighten down the axe head. It flew off. It killed somebody. But that doesn't matter. I can go to a city of refuge. No, it was inconvenient to leave your home and family and go to a city of refuge and wait until the high priest died before you could leave and go back home. So there was some punishment for negligent homicide. It would be kind of tragic if there was an accident and you had to go to the city of refuge, but I guess you can't have everything. Now, this provision of staying in the city until the high priest died is a repeat from Numbers 35:25. God's already told Moses this is what they're supposed to do, and Joshua does it. In fact, reading the book of Joshua can give you a sense of deja vu, because so much has already been told to Moses, this is what you're going to do. And then in Joshua says, I'm doing it, just like Moses said, and so there's a lot of repetition. Now, I have a problem that I thought about here. What if the high priest died a week or so after the manslayer arrived? It seems like it would be dangerous for the manslayer to leave the city so soon. He would be allowed to legally. I wonder if he could stay in the city optionally for a longer time until things cooled off, until the avenger of blood gave up his chase. And I really believe that's probably what happened, although the text does not say so. Now, one of the cities of refuge was Hebron, also known as Kiriath Arba. Famous city, I've talked about it much. And it was established as a city of refuge. I haven't mentioned this either. The Levites were given the city of refuge. That's who owned these cities, the Levites. So here's our problem. How could Hebron be previously given to Caleb, and now how could it be given to the Levites? Caleb, of course, was from the tribe of Judah. The Levites were from a different tribe. How could they both own the city? Well, the answer is the city and the suburbs were given to Levites, as we'll see in the next chapter. The surrounding villages and fields were given to Caleb. Now, verse 8 tells where all these cities of refuge were placed. That's just an exact repeat from Deuteronomy 4, where it says that Moses set apart three cities across the Jordan to the east: Bezer, Ramoth in Gilead, and Golan in Bashan. Same three cities on the east. So you see, again, Joshua repeats what has been said earlier as having been done by Moses. Now, let's look at where the cities of refuge are. And as we go through this geographically, we will see that the cities are distributed north to south and east to west. You got three on the west side of the Jordan and three on the east side of the Jordan. Very little overlap between. There's a little bit, but not much. When I say overlap, I mean an overlap in the reasonable geographical areas around the city, which living in which would be a manslayer who would have to go to the city. So on the west side, starting in the north, go right northwest of Lake Hula, which is the little lake right above the Sea of Galilee. Right there at the northern end of the Jordan River is Kadesh. We go south of the Sea of Galilee, down the Jordan Valley, go about, halfway down in Ephraim, there is Shechem. Go down the Jordan River, go down to the Dead Sea, go halfway down the Dead Sea, and there's Hebron, south of Jerusalem. So that's the west side of the Jordan River. The east side, you start with Golan, which is due east of the Sea of Galilee, right there in Bashan. And then you go a little bit further south and east, Ramoth Gilead. That would be, it depends, it is the northern edge of the tribe of Gad is disputed. Could be in Gad or it could be in Manasseh, but it's in that general area. It's about, a third of the way down the Jordan River. And then you go south all the way to the tip of the Dead Sea, and you see Bezer, which is right there at the northern end of the tribe of Reuben, the northern boundary of the tribe of Reuben. So these six cities were spread out north to south, east to west. Now, if you accidentally kill somebody, say, the northeast tip of the Sea of Galilee, you would probably have a choice. You could either go to Kadesh or Golan, equidistant. And so there were some places where a manslayer would probably have a choice of where to go, but most everywhere in Israel you would have one city of refuge that was the closest place for you to go to. They were easily available to any manslayer, so it was spread out geographically in just a proper fashion. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished chapter 20 of Joshua, verses 1 through 9. In our next chapter, we will look at the cities and the pasture land allotted to Levi, the tribe of the Levites. And of course, the cities of refuge were also allotted to the Levites. So hope to see you next time. Hope you enjoyed this audio.